But I'm losing my best friend. I can't believe this could be the end. It looks as though you're letting go. And if it's real, well, I don't want to know.
Hi, welcome to another edition of the 19th Hole Golf Show. I'm Ryan Ballingy. It's good to have you here with us. You can reach me on Twitter. I'll be rarely at Ryan Ballingy. You can find Golf News Net on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and Snapchat at the handle Golf News Net. All of our coverage is available on golfnewsnet.com. You can find us on Yahoo Sports' Devil Ball Golf blog as well, and find us on Roku TV and soon to be on Apple TV. Just to give you guys a heads up, some of you are avid users of the GNN app, and we are actually deprecating it, which means we're going to get rid of it. We had a number of you download it and really enjoy the app over approximately the year that we had it. And as you may know, or you may not know, depending on your experience in technology, but there aren't that many apps that people use every day. You know, you think about the ones that you use, like you maybe four or five each day. And then the rest just kind of fall in the background and you kind of hold on to them onto your phone, which means for us, it looks like you downloaded it, but we don't know that. You don't use it all that often until we look at the usage data. And frankly, the growth of the site is so much better than the app growth that it just kind of made sense to just point people back to the website. So we won't be updating the app anymore. Our contract ran out with our provider. So if you have any questions about it, feel free to get a hold of me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com, but that's the reality. On the happy side, we are presented by BetDSI.com. We use BetDSI's odds every single week for all of our odds posts. Even if you aren't in a place in the world listening to this where you can bet legally on sports, particularly in golf, it is a great tool if you're a fantasy player to know what people who are betting on golf know what they're doing. The sharks kind of move their money and kind of give you a sense of who they think is going to do well. You can see where those odds move and where the percentage of money is moving for each and every tournament every week. So check out betdsi.com. I know it's been a few weeks since we've done the show, so we've got a couple of different things that we can go into. And I kind of want to start down this path with Pat Perez. Pat Perez is a two-time PGA Tour winner, if you're not that engaged. And if you aren't, I'm not sure why you're listening to this show, because we play a lot of inside baseball. But Pat Perez won the OHL Classic in November. He had come back in October from a torn labrum surgery in March that basically kept him out the entire season, obviously. And came back, has been in good form, has been playing well. And kind of in the meantime, while he was out, he had been hosting this show on SiriusXM PGA Tour Radio with Michael Collins, who's over at ESPN. And the show's called Out of Bounds. And it's basically a couple of hours once a week, on Tuesdays, where Pat and Michael kind of go back and forth on a variety of topics in golf, sometimes outside of golf. But Pat's an outspoken guy. He is not afraid to share his opinion, never has been. He's kind of the guy who says what a lot of people think and they're too afraid to say. And I've enjoyed having Pat on this show. I've had limited interaction with him other than that, but I've always found him in his public dealings to be pretty forthright and maybe occasionally a little hot-headed, but that's fine. You can live with that. And he said on his show on Tuesday, kind of went into some comments about Tiger Woods, basically saying he told everybody Tiger wasn't going to play the full season. He wasn't going to play all these four events in 5 weeks. And he said that Tiger's probably not going to really come back, and he knows he can't beat anybody. And that was his words, knows he can't beat anybody. And kind of came to the conclusion, if Tiger doesn't play in the Masters, then it's over. He's not going to just kind of languish around and not continue to just kind of be on the shelf and not really play. And the comments, I don't really care what you think about the truth to those comments, whether you believe them or not, whether you are invested in them or not. But the reaction to what Pat Perez said was pretty fascinating to me, because you're kind of in one of two camps. You're in the one camp where I am, which is he's just saying what he thinks, and a lot of people think that, and probably a lot of peers of Tiger Woods and Pat Perez's think that. And those guys go way back. They know each other. They talk to each other. They beat each other up in junior golf, going back to their California days. Obviously, Tiger got the better of Pat Perez a lot, but they know each other. It's not like this is some guy who's never met someone else kind of going after them. But So this is a situation of familiarity. And what's the problem in saying your opinion? You know, so often in golf media circles or in golf fan circles, fans get upset and media get upset when players are milquetoast and they're robotic and they have rote answers and they tell you, they say a whole lot of nothing in responses to your questions or when things happen, and it kind of sounds either corporate or forced or whatever. And here is a guy in Pat Perez who said what he thought and didn't seem to particularly care about the ramifications at the time, and he got roasted for it. So why are you roasting the guy? And then you're on the other side, and usually it involves some kind of personal disqualifying background to it. And you go, oh, well, that guy only won twice on the PGA Tour. Tiger's won 79 times. How can he have an opinion? Or something along the lines related to his CV. Like, okay, his resume just isn't good enough to be able to criticize a guy like Tiger Woods. And I take issue with that because my resume isn't good enough to criticize Tiger Woods. Neither is yours or anybody else's. There aren't that many people on the planet with a resume good enough to criticize Tiger Woods on the merits of what they accomplished in golf. There's one guy living that can do it, and that guy's name is Jack Nicklaus. The other guy who conceivably do it is Gary Player, who's resume isn't quite as good as Woods's, but it's certainly stout. Those are the two guys. If we kind of limited it to, you can only criticize someone if you're as good or better than them at something, then that would be it. Those would be the two people who could say anything. And I'm pretty sure Jack Nicklaus is not going to say until Tiger Woods retires that he will beat Tiger Woods, and his major record will be safe. And Gary Player has kind of had unvarnished opinions at times about Woods' behavior and his future. And he has had no problem stating that. So it's not like he's ever had trouble saying his opinion. He's been on the show a couple times. You know the reality of that. If you've listened to those conversations, I just ask one question and then I hear him pontificate for 45 minutes and it's fascinating. So if those are the only two guys, then we're creating a dangerous precedent. And to be truthful, I think that mindset, that how dare you because your resume isn't good enough, comes from the stick-to-sports crowd. And you may be in the stick-to-sports crowd. But if you're not, or you don't usually hear that term, you know, stick-to-sports is basically the response a lot of folks get when they, in sports media in particular, when they step out of what they are typically talking about, golf, sports, what have you, and they talk about something that makes people uncomfortable. It could be, typically it's political in nature. As you kind of have figured, a lot of people who write about golf, there are some conservatives, but there are a lot of liberal folks, and they are not shy in sharing their political opinions. And often the response is stick to sports. Like, I don't follow you to hear about politics. And my response to those people in the occasions that I have tweeted or talked about politics, and that has decreased over time because I hate Twitter more and more every day, but my response has always been, you're following me, you're not following golf. If you wanted to follow golf, you would follow a different account. But you're following me for who I am. Take it or leave it. And if you would prefer not that, have that kind of content in your feed, don't follow me. It's not changing my life. I mean, I just had this conversation with my wife and then a bunch of different people before that about, I mean, the reality is we get like 100 clicks to the website a day from Twitter, maybe 200 on a good day. And it doesn't change my life one way or the other. So I don't, that interaction, if it's lousy, is not worth it. If it's good, it's awesome. And there are so many people that I interact with on Twitter that are great, that even when they disagree with me, or even if they have an issue with what I've said, they handle it in a way that two people talking face-to-face would handle it. That they would talk through it, they'd have a conversation, and that would be the end of it. And then you move on, and your relationship is perfectly fine. That's what adult people do. And the stick-to-sports crowd isn't really that way. The stick-to-sports crowd wants what they want, and they believe it is their right to get what they want from you because they paid $0 to follow you. And that's kind of how it works for professional athletes, too. and I'm sure on a much grander scale because they have so many more people watching them. Even guys like Pat Perez, who, yes, has only, compared to Woods, 2 PGA Tour wins. But there are a lot of people who care what Pat Perez does and potentially says. And he learned that this week. He deleted his Twitter account on Monday, however, because he caught a lot of flack for hitting 3 different fans with poor drives in the final round of the Genesis Open. And he heard it particularly from overseas fans about not yelling 4, not giving the fans or marshals who could indicate where his drive was going fair warning that something bad was about to happen, coming their way downrange. And he probably didn't appreciate all the flack that he got for that, and he bowed out of Twitter, deleted his account. So then he says what he does on Tuesday on his SiriusXM show. It didn't really come out until Thursday, which is kind of surprising. I'm actually very surprised it took 2 days for people to figure that out. And I was traveling. I didn't hear it or see it. So I just kind of caught it on the tail end on Thursday. But then all of a sudden, obviously, people are like, oh, that Pat Perez is bashing Tiger Woods. How dare he? I'm going to find him on Twitter, give him a piece of my mind, tell him to stick to playing golf, you know, stick to sports, stick to what you know. And they're kind of shocked his Twitter account is gone. And, of course, that leads to the natural reaction of, this guy's a coward. He's not willing to deal with the ramifications of putting his opinion out into the ether. And I think that's a fair criticism. I think it is a completely fair criticism. If you say something, if you say something controversial, if you say something using a platform that you have, either that you've built or that you've earned or what have you, that you have access to, if you say something that's going to ruffle feathers, that could tick people off, that could affect them, affect their lives, you need to be able to own up to that. That needs to be a part of your personality. If you're willing to step out and say something, you need to be willing to step back and hear something. And in this case, it doesn't seem like Pat Perez did that very well. So they're kind of both sides kind of work out here. Yeah, you should be able to say what you want. You should have unvarnished opinions that shouldn't be disrespectful. And I don't think that's where Pat Perez came from with his opinion. He came from a place of kind of not angst or anger, just kind of disappointment, I think. Like, this guy said he's going to come back, and he didn't. I don't think he's going to come back anymore. I think he's done if he doesn't play the Masters. I think that's a viable opinion that is not disrespectful. That's just the truth. And he also kind of earned it, the backlash that he got for not saying or not being on Twitter, not being in a public way accessible to defend what he had to say. Because you can't just say what you say and then go, well, that's just it. I'm not going to interact with you. I'm not going to deal with the ramifications of that. I'm just going to back out and everything's going to be fine. That's not okay either. And that's kind of the territory that comes with putting yourself out there for public display. And so that's it. I hope Pat Perez comes back to Twitter, maybe realizes, hey, maybe we should restore that account. I don't want him to apologize. I don't want anyone to apologize when they say something controversial, unless it is hateful, unless it is something that offends sensibilities. And I mean basic sensibilities, not like I'm upset you criticized Tiger Woods, more like you said something racist or sexist or homophobic or, you know, you name it, anti-Semitic. Go down the line of things that offend your basic sensibilities about how people should be treated. But it is okay to criticize other people. I don't want my athletes, I don't want my public figures that I'm interested in to back down from what they have to say just because someone else got butthurt about it. That you can't win with everybody. In fact, you shouldn't want to win with everybody, because if you want to win with everybody, then you yourself are nothing. And that goes to Tiger Woods. He was a guy who wanted to win with everybody by saying nothing for so long. And it bit him in the ass when he finally had to cop to something. And Pat Perez is kind of the opposite reaction. With Pat Perez, it's more like Tiger, which is kind of weird. It should be kind of more like Steve Bowditch, where in this bizarro world where we have all come to realize the horrible dangers of DUI, DWI, he gets pulled over. He drank 10 beers, had 3 vodkas. He failed a field sobriety test. He blew a .20, .18 in the field. And people who have been rooting for this guy because of his candor, his transparency about his struggles, the way that he was willing to defend himself against people who said he should just get off tour. He has 2 PGA Tour wins also, by the way. And he gets arrested, and people just go, man, I wish that – I hope the best for him. Not, how could you do that? You could kill someone. You could kill somebody by driving drunk, by falling asleep in your truck, your courtesy car truck, because you did something reckless, because you didn't want to have the inconvenience or the embarrassment of rolling back into some bar the next morning before your tea time to go get your courtesy car instead of taking an Uber home, doing the thing that you know you should do. And the reaction wasn't so much about that. It was, man, I hope he gets better. I'm pulling for you. And it wasn't as stern. And that was because of Bowditch's personality, because of his transparency and candor in his professional life. He was given some kind of really undeserved courtesy for his personal behavior. And we're going to segue out of this topic in a second, but I think that there are often times, and you see this in everything. You see it in political viewpoints. You see it in your personal opinions, your own biases. And it's something we all have to confront, that when we have similar situations and we have opposite reactions for whatever bias, because you like someone personally, because they didn't do something to you personally, whatever it is, but you react differently to it. And really, the reaction in a lot of times should be flipped, should be the opposite. And it's that confirmation bias, it's that your personal biases, all those things come through. And it's fascinating to see how that plays out in a public forum like Twitter, which, again, like I said, I don't really enjoy, but I go to for getting news, for sharing news, because you, I guess, again, about the bias of wanting credit. There you go. I brought up Bowditch a little bit, not to embarrass the guy. I did mention some details of his arrest. There is a video posted online if you want to take the time to watch it. There is body cam video from the police officer who arrested Stephen Bowditch about the entire basically 20-minute stretch of picking him up, doing the field sobriety test, doing the blow into the alcohol machine, and then the breathalyzer test, and then putting him in the squad car. You can watch that online if you want. I did not tweet it out, and I won't, because that's your choice. If you want to find that information, you can find it. I'm not trying to embarrass a guy entirely for his poor behavior, but it did bring up an interesting thing, and I kind of alluded to it a minute ago, and that is, why didn't Steve Bowditch take a damn Uber? Why didn't he grab a cab or call someone that he knew to come pick him up from one of the places he was drinking that night, get him, and that he could get back to his car in the morning from wherever he was staying, assuming a hotel of some kind? Why didn't he do that? And that ran through my head a bunch of different times. I'm sure it probably ran through some of your heads if you heard about it. Why didn't he do that? And I was having a conversation with Will Haskett, who reads Monday columns for us. He's done podcasting for us, GNN Live for us. He's awesome. You can find him in other places, including on PGA Tour Radio, calling a number of events this year. And we were getting into a kind of side conversation about that. And he brought up an interesting point. And it's one I've kind of noodled over a little bit in recent weeks. And that is, maybe he didn't do it. Maybe he didn't call that Uber, didn't call that cab, that other ride, because he feared being embarrassed of having to roll into a parking lot somewhere the next day, getting out of a cab, getting the keys out for his courtesy car that is just smattered with logos, tournament logo, PGA Tour logo, says courtesy car, all of those things, getting in there and someone seeing him and tweeting a video or sharing an image of like, hey, look at Steve Bowditch. He must have gotten bombed last night and he's coming back for the drop-off of shame in the morning to get your car. And he didn't want to deal with that. He didn't want to deal with that part of it, so he figured, okay, well, I'm going to make it back and hopefully no one will have caught me, and hopefully I won't murder anybody with my car in the process. And fortunately, even though he was weaving in and out of lanes, he didn't injure anybody. Fortunately, came to a stop at a red light. I guess put the vehicle in park and fell asleep through multiple cycles, and that's kind of how this whole thing started with the arrest process. But why didn't he do it? And what do we have to do? What can we, as either fans, or what can the PGA Tour do to make sure that guys in this situation don't get in this situation, don't get exacerbated, don't make it worse by getting arrested or having a problem? And I don't know if it's limited to a certain, if this is a case isolated to Bowditch, who has admitted to having faced issues with anxiety and depression in the past, who has admitted to trying to take his own life. But are there other instances of guys on the PGA Tour who are either going through personal problems, professional problems, or it's just the nature of who they are, that they get themselves into spots either during tournament week or what have you, where they're in a courtesy car, they're in a tournament spotlight, you know, they're going to be playing, and they're out drinking, and they get too much to drink, and they don't want to go through that potential embarrassment the next morning? Is there a way we can change that? Can we camouflage? Can we come up with more camouflaged courtesy cars? Can the PGA Tour give these guys an Uber code to use? What is out there? What is available for these guys to have a mechanism so that I do not care if you choose to drink or kind of go over the top. You're a professional. You're an adult. That is your choice. And I'm not going to judge Stephen Bowditch for choosing to do that, because there are plenty of nights where I've drank my face off. But my goal has been to make sure that I set myself up with a plan to get home in a way that doesn't require me being behind the wheel of an automobile. Either that's an Uber, it's a Subway, I mean, depending on where you do it. Sometimes it's staying right next to the bar, it's walking. I mean, you have options. But why didn't that happen? And I'm sure there will be very limited conversation about this. But I wanted to bring it up, and I don't know what you think about it, but you can let me know. Again, not a big fan of Twitter, but you can tell me at Ryan Ballingy or email me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. All right, last thing I want to talk about is the Florida swing. The Florida swing's complexion has changed this year, because the World Golf Championships event that used to be at Doral, Trump Doral, has been moved. And it's not there anymore. And for basically the first time in 50 years, there will not be a PGA Tour presence at Doral sometime in March or April. And that WGC event moves to Mexico. It's in Mexico City next week. And it's on a course none of us have ever seen, and we will all experience together for the first time. But the Florida swing, plus Mexico, Flexico swing, if you want to call it that, is underway at the Honda Classic. And that field is down this year. Now, there are a couple of reasons. I think one is that the Riviera event, the Genesis Open, has become more in vogue in recent years. And there was some conversation about this, again, with Will Haskett, actually, about the event. And there are guys who are top players in the world right now. You know, Dustin Johnson always wanted to play it. Spieth got into it. Rory's gotten into it. Day's gotten into it. And when those guys are playing in the event, you go play where they play. And then getting Tiger Woods' involvement this year certainly helped. The purse was increased, $7 million. So there's money on the line. Guys want to play that event if they can, because Riviera is amazing. It's one of the best courses the guys play regularly every year on the PGA Tour schedule. And now that is kind of the en vogue event. You know, you got most of the world top 50 there. You had, if Rory had been healthy, you would have had 9 of the world top 10 in that field. And then you go the next week, you go back cross country to Honda, and it's an event in Florida. I mean, this is kind of supposed to be the series of events where, you know, between Honda and the API, that you're going to get a great field, because those guys either live in the Jupiter Palm Beach area or they live in Orlando, and that's why those guys should be there. And they're not. And part of that is the purse. It's $800,000 less than the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am, and it's $600,000 less than last week's Genesis Open. The other part of it is PGA National is hard. It's not fun to play PGA National. It's usually windy. There's a lot of kind of placement golf. There's a lot of course management involved in playing the champion course. And you can just get beaten down over the course of a week. That's not a good time. I mean, winning's fun, and the crowd is usually good. But other than that, not a lot of fun. I mean, Riviera is fun. Hard, but fun. And I think that there is kind of going to be this pulling back a little bit. And the field's not bad. I mean, at Honda, it's not like John Deere. It's pretty good, but it's a very international flavor to the field. And a lot of the top 10 guys aren't playing because they went and played Riviera the week before. They don't want to do two in a row quite yet. And they're doing, or they would do three in a row because they're in Mexico next week. So by bringing in the WGC and moving it to Mexico, they have negatively impacted the Florida swing. What I would like to see them do is decide in future years, and this will not happen next year, it's already been reported, but maybe in 2019, to have the WGC Mexico Championship kick off March and be after Riviera. And then that way, you could have your basically plotting going back toward Florida, play in L.A., play in Mexico, and go to Florida. And then play four in a row in Florida. You do your Honda, your Valspar, your API. You have your events. And you do it that way. And I think that makes more sense. But, the politics of golf has created a situation for the PGA Tour where they were in a rush to get out of Doral. They didn't want to deal with Trump, then candidate Trump, now President Trump, and the things that he was saying about immigrants, women, Muslims. I mean, we can go down the line. Stick to sports, but they wanted out of that contract. They didn't want to deal with that, and they didn't want to deal with a guy who was going to show up at the trophy presentation as the owner just because he had a lot of money. They didn't want to deal with that either. That was an issue before the politics. And they decided, they kind of rushed into figuring out a place to put this thing, and they landed in Mexico, and it's a weird setup. I mean, it's a weird conglomerate of Mexican businesses and businessmen to sponsor this championship and to highlight parts of Mexico City where, I mean, that's a fascinating case study. I mean, that is the Chicago of South America, the rest of North America, I should say. To our neighbor to the south, that's their Chicago. I mean, where it's lots of crime and you don't know what they haven't figured out an answer for it in years. And meanwhile, trying to highlight the city as a destination for international travelers, including Americans, to come. It's an awkward situation. So I'm not saying that the tour shouldn't have done the deal. I mean, you go find places to play for your players for the amount of money you want them to be able to play for. They got that in this championship. But unfortunately, it comes at the expense of the Florida swing, and I wish that weren't the case. So we'll see how that all plays out in the next couple of weeks as guys commit to tournaments. Rory McIlroy committed to the Arnold Palmer Invitational today. He also committed to the Travelers Championship in June, the week after the U.S. Open in Connecticut. By PGA Tour rules that start this year, guys who are not lifetime members, so if you don't have 20 wins or more, then you have to play a new event each year in the schedule you hadn't played in the prior 4 years. So this is the one McIlroy picked. It's going to be great for that tournament. They have a tremendous amount of support up there in the Hartford, Connecticut area. It's a really well-run tournament from a media perspective and from just a logistics perspective. So I'm super happy for them to get that kind of nod this year. And hopefully this policy works out and helps tournaments that are good tournaments, they're well-run, and they just need one star, two stars to get more people in the door and to get them to really enjoy golf. And then maybe that has some benefits for the sport down the line. But anyway, that's kind of where we stand. All right, that's going to do it for us this week on the show. Next week, we will try to record a show. I know we've kind of been spotty so far at the start of the year, but I will be on my annual buddy trip this year. That week, I'll be in Orlando. So hopefully we'll be able to do a show of some kind, even if it's a little bit short. But we'll try and put something together. If you are a Roku TV user, please download our app. It's just Golf News Net. You can find it. We're coming soon for Apple TV, and we also have a YouTube channel. We've started doing a more or less daily vlog video podcast called Two of the First, kind of the two biggest stories of the golf day, if you'd be so kind to check that out. and subscribe to it, as we hopefully land on iTunes pretty soon with that too. And if you listen to this show through iTunes, if you wouldn't mind giving us a 5-star review, it is tremendously helpful. Helps us reach more people, helps let people know who have never heard about us that we're a show worth listening to. So if you go to iTunes, go to our page, search the 19th Hole Golf Show, and go to the reviews, you don't have to leave comments. Just give us 5 stars. We'll love you forever. And if you do have comments in your 5-star review, we'll be happy to read them or answer those questions on the air. Until next week, I'm Ryan Balaji saying thanks for listening, thanks for all your support, and we'll see you next time on the 19th Hole Golf Show.